I think we should be looking at ourselves more as anchor institutions, some type of institution in the community, serving the community through the good and the bad, you know? And so by that, I mean, on a daily basis, we're providing water. We're providing the wastewater services as well. So we're doing all that we can in the water system, but that's during the good times. But during the bad times, we also need to say, yeah, maybe we had a misstep here. And here's how we're going to fix it. And here's how we're going to move forward so it doesn't happen.
Welcome to Management Matters, the award-winning National Academy of Public Administration podcast, where policy meets practice. I'm Terry Gerton, president of the Academy. Our grand challenge focus for March is on creating modern water systems for safe and sustainable use. In this episode, I'll talk with Academy Fellow Kathy Bailey about what makes the management of water systems so challenging. Kathy is the Executive Director of Greater Cincinnati Water Works for the City of Cincinnati. Kathy, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you in the fellowship, and I couldn't ask for a better expert for this topic.
Thank you.
But you have spent your entire career with Greater Cincinnati Water Works. You started as a chemist and rose to become the first woman and African American to lead the utility since its formation 200 years ago. What got you started in the water business?
Yeah, it's been a cool journey so far. Right out of college, I worked at USEPA here in Cincinnati. I was in the drinking water research facility, and I was a chemist there. And I did research chemistry on the water there. And we had a cooperative agreement with the city of Cincinnati. And we would receive different lab samples every month. And part of my job was to analyze those samples. And I remember getting to know the woman who would drop off the samples. And she said, hey, there's some opportunities available at the city of Cincinnati and our water department. Is it something you might be interested in? And at first I told her no. I'm like, no, I'm cool here. I'm not interested in it, you know? And then I said, well, maybe I'll check it out, you know? And part of it was really just her enthusiasm, energy she had around the job. She was just always excited about the work that she was doing. And so I thought, maybe I'll just toss my hat into the ring and see what happens. And that's what I did. And that was 32 years ago, you know, and I never thought about going to another city department or anything. Once I got here to water, I was fascinated by, you know, just the chemistry of how we treat the water and everything that goes into it and just the whole cycle of it all. I was just fascinated. And so I've been here. I'm in various roles, but I've been here for 32 years in the department.
Well, I can imagine in 32 years that you've seen a lot of changes. What would you say, like, were the biggest organizationally, process-wise, just how we even think about water systems?
Yes, for me, I mean, I've been the director since 2015. And so, you know, I've tried to look at, you know, what are the changes that we need now? I've certainly seen a number of them over the years. I can remember, you know, back to the late 90s, early 2000s, it was all about us trying to expand and serve more and be more of a regional partner and help others in the region, you know, expand and get water. So we did that for a while, but probably since 2015, since I've been director, you know, probably that some of the pressing things that we've been working on have been trying to diversify our workforce and trying to make sure that our workforce looks a lot like the community that we serve. And that's pretty challenging, you know, because it's not, you know, the water utility industry is still pretty much a heavy white male industry. And so we're trying to get more people of color and more women to not only come into the industry, but stay in the industry and then be interested in taking those leadership roles. And so that's still a challenge. And so, you know, I've tried my best to lead by example and let many here at the utility know that it's possible. It's possible for them to be a leader in not only in this utility, but in the industry. And so that's been a challenge. But then we've also seen a lot of other, you know, things that have come along the way that we've had to focus on due to COVID. You know, we now have just a larger group of our customer base that are struggling with affordability. And what does that look like? And how can we help them? And how can we keep them in water? And so we definitely have a lot of challenges. And I think it's grown just because of COVID. But probably for me, one of the early things that I was trying to strive for was to just diversify our workforce and make sure that people felt comfortable that they could sit for these promotional opportunities and really have a chance. And so we've worked very hard on our culture and trying to make sure that it's one that is accepting of all.
Well, Kathy, you're such an exemplar yourself in the key leadership position, but could you talk just a little bit more about why it's so important to you that your workforce looks like the community it supports?
Well, I think with a lot of things that, you know, the more that we understand each other and the more that we have that diversity, then we can appreciate and accept each other more. And so to me, the more we have a diverse workforce, then we can better relate to some of the challenges that might be in our community. And if we can relate to more of our people in the community, then we can understand how we can help them and serve them better. Because at the heart of all of this is how can we meet them where they are and serve them better. And for me, it's important that we have that workforce that represents the community. Then we can understand each other better. Then we can offer better service.
Thank you for sharing that, because, you know, water is one of those three basic factors of life, and we tend to take it for granted. So that's one of the reasons we picked this grand challenge, right? Safe and sustainable use in modern water systems. From your perspective, what makes the management of water systems so complicated and challenging?
Well, you know,
sorry, we only have a half an hour.
Right. It's like I probably need a few days for that. But, you know, I think what makes it so challenging is that we're not comfortable being seen. And by that, I mean, you know, for years, we've just been in the background, you know, and out of sight, out of mind. Just know that your pipes are in the ground. Just know that we're doing our job at the utility. But we really don't want you to take notice of us. Just know that we're doing our job in bringing water to you and taking wastewater away from you. But now, you know, there's a greater need for us to be seen. There's, you know, we need people to understand the value of water. We need people to understand what we're doing and how we're doing it, because there's so much that our communities have to do as far as rate increases and really understand how they can support us so that we can maintain our systems. And so for many years, we've just kind of been in the background, but now we've come to the forefront. We've come to the forefront with money that we receive from the federal government that is now passed down to the state. And in many ways, we're asking our communities to see us, to know what we do. And that's hard because we're not comfortable being seen in the community. And so, you know, in Cincinnati, we struggle with that, but we are now doing better telling our story. But that's just in Cincinnati. We know some other large water systems are starting to tell their story and just share, you know, the story of water, the value of water. But I'm not just concerned about the large utilities. I'm concerned about the small and medium ones who might not have the resources to tell their story, who might not know how to do it. And it's important that they do. And so it's challenging, you know, in this day and time to lead a water system without having those resources to do that. And I think that's a big part of it. We've just been in the background for so long, but now we're coming out of that darkness into the light. And we just, in many ways, don't know how to do it. Or if we do it, we might not be very comfortable with it. So then we might not do it the best that we can.
That's a really interesting cultural issue to deal with. Out of sight, out of mind, and happy to be there for a long time. And now all of a sudden you want to tell what's going on with the water system so that people understand and that you can help address their issues. And so As you do that, what are you finding as the big storylines that resonate? What are the key points that you want to get across to your community?
Well, I mean, we've had a couple of recent examples that were forced to the light, you know, in the situations of Flint and Jackson, Mississippi. And so those are unfortunate crisis and stories that were told. And so we're trying to tell, you know, the better stories, or even if we do have a challenging story, we're trying to make sure that we get the right message to them to let them know we've recovered from that situation and we're doing better. So that's a big part of what we're trying to tell them. But more importantly to me, I think we should be looking at ourselves more as anchor institutions, some type of institution in the community that is serving the community through the good and the bad, you know? And so by that, I mean, on a daily basis, we're providing water. We're doing everything that we can. We're providing the wastewater services as well on the other part of drinking water. So we're doing all that we can in the water system, but that's doing the good times. But during the bad times, we also need to say, yeah, maybe we had a misstep here, and here's how we're going to fix it. And here's how we're going to move forward so it doesn't happen. And as long as we're out there being that type of an anchor institution, where we're always out there telling our story, the good and the bad, letting you know what we do, the capital projects, the billing changes, the rate increases that we need, the partnerships in the community. As long as we're out there doing that, then I think that's a good thing that we can do for the utilities and then to move us forward. But it's challenging to be that, right? Because there's just so much that we have on our plate that we need to do. And we're not there yet. We're just starting to understand what an anchor institution is. And I think every community will have to define it for themselves. But in the water utility industry, we're talking about anchor institutions and how that can be a significant presence in a community. And in many ways can then foster growth in certain neighborhoods and really just be this great thing, a positive impact in the community. And so that's kind of what we're trying to be here in Cincinnati, but we're still figuring it out.
Well, I can imagine it's a journey.
It is a journey.
Yeah. But you mentioned a couple of things. You talked about capital investments, and earlier you talked about rising challenges with affordability. So I wanted to ask you, when you, as the director, Greater Water Works in Cincinnati, are thinking about investment decisions, how do you balance all of that? How do you think about the resources that you need to make the capital improvements and execute the maintenance at the same time as you're thinking about affordability? How do you keep those all in balance?
Yeah, it's definitely a struggle. We certainly need rate increases on a regular basis to help with just, you know, the operations of the water system. But we also, here in Cincinnati, we have a significant capital program, and we need to continue to make sure that we're reinvesting in our infrastructure. So we strive to at least replace 1% of our water mains per year, you know, and so we have about 3,600 miles of water mains. So we're looking at 1% replacement each year. And so we do that, and we have bond sales, and we strive to go for loans at the state level. The state recently has had some grants, and so we've been able to apply for and receive some of those grants as well. But we recognize we can't just do it with one bucket of money. And so we try to pull from all of those different resources and balance that. Because otherwise, if we don't, then it's all on our customers. It's all on the ratepayers to then have significant rate increases. And so we're trying to pull from as many funding sources as we can to make sure that we're tapping all the resources to then lessen the burden on our customers, on our ratepayers. And so when we see those annual rate increases, we will have them as low as they can be, but have us still, you know, get the funding that we need to maintain our water system. And so it's a dance. It's a dance that we do on a regular basis, because we're trying to, again, offset those so those rates are low. It has been a challenge, but probably in the last 8 or 9 years, I think we've done pretty well with it. Our rates have been lower than what was projected when we did cost of services studies. So that's helpful. And we've been able to still bring in the funding that helps us maintain our system. But it's a challenge and we're figuring it out. But again, I go back to the small and medium water systems because I'm challenged by those. And by that, I mean, it's not enough for the large water systems to just think about themselves, but we have to think about the impact for these small and mediums. And the small and medium utilities often don't have those same resources, nor do they really know how to apply to get a grant or apply to get a loan. And so those are some of the challenges I continue to think about. Because the large water systems, we're going to be all right. We have the resources to figure out things, to figure out how to apply for grants and loans. And we often hear about federal programs before the small and medium utilities do, but they don't have those resources. And so because of that, they're often left in the dark. They don't know how to pull down money. They might not have the same type of rate increases that we do. And that's when you start to see some challenging water systems and those that, you know, your Jackson, Mississippi's and situations like that. And it's unfortunate, but I think it's because they don't have the same resources, you know, the staff or the people on hand on a daily basis to figure out how they're going to keep their systems afloat and go after that additional funding to help them.
So this is really interesting. And I want to ask how this network of water systems works, because Cincinnati, you have your 3,600 miles of water mains, but you're connected on all of the other ends to other systems, right? And you all share watersheds and, you know, you've got to manage all of those things together, and you have to work with the state and you have to work with EPA. So can you talk a little bit about how the network of water systems works or doesn't work, and how you work across community boundaries that aren't actual geographic boundaries, and how you integrate all of that?
Yeah, so it's a great question, and it's a fascinating setup in many ways. But certainly here in the state of Ohio, since we're considered, you know, a large water system, then we're talking to the other large ones, right? And so we're talking to Columbus and Cleveland and Toledo, you know, and Akron and wherever we need to. But then there's also the small systems. And so if you look at Cincinnati, you know, a small system that's right next to us is Norwood, Ohio. And so we're trying to be a good partner to them, too. And so we connect and make sure that they're OK, you know, or if we hear about something for small and medium systems, when we let them know, you know, and so that's that local type of network in the state. But if you go beyond the state, there's organizations like the American Waterworks Association and the U.S. Water Alliance and the Association of Metropolitan Water Agencies and the Water Environment Federation for WEF and wastewater. And so there's all these large organizations that many of us are members of. And so that's the backbone of the network that we have. And so we attend those meetings. They have annual meetings. Some of us sit on the boards of some of those organizations. And so that's how we have a very strong network to help each other across the nation. And also close to us, you know, we sit at this nice corner of Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky. And so we often are down in Louisville, or Louisville comes up to Cincinnati. And so we're connecting and sharing different ideas. We collaborate on projects. Another organization is the Water Research Foundation. So there's a lot of research that's done in the industry, and we all participate on those research projects. So it's a very convoluted and complicated in many ways network, but it's one that has been working for many decades. And so we continue to do that. But I will say the challenge with that, again, is the small and the mediums. And you'll keep hearing me say that, because I am really bothered by some of the challenges that they have. And part of me learning about those challenges I was on loan to the federal government from September of 2022 to September of 2023 as a senior advisor to help them establish their lead service line accelerator program. And that was to help them jumpstart lead service line replacement programs in 40 communities across 4 states. And so I was able to see firsthand in these small and medium-sized utilities some of the challenges that they have. But I also learned that they don't have those same resources. They don't have access to these organizations that I just mentioned. They don't have access to some of that state and federal funding because they don't have resources to apply for those grants and loans. And so that's why that's really on my mind right now, because I saw firsthand how they're struggling way more than those large water utilities are. And it's a concern of mine. We've got to figure out a better way to help them, to pull them along at the same pace as the large utilities so that they have the resources to maintain their infrastructure. They have the proper workforce. They have, you know, the ability to tell their story, to get the funding. All of what we have as large water utilities, they need to and they deserve to have the same resources that we have. And so we've got to figure out a better way to bring them into the fold so they can learn from all the things that we're doing as well.
That's such a great point, and certainly something that the Academy is seeing as we work with communities across the country, this missing capacity in small and medium-sized communities. And water capital grants are one piece of it, but there's so many others. And I'd love to hear your ideas around the kind of other challenges that are facing water systems. I mean, like cyber attacks on utilities, or as you're dealing with the water systems, new pollutants or climate change. How is this big network of bigs and smalls and states and feds coming together to address these real threats?
Yeah, we definitely are. You know, for cybersecurity as an example, you know, we have a number of networks where we're collecting information, sharing information at conferences, sharing information in forums, webinars, so that everybody can learn, you know, the best way to have cybersecurity solutions. We have the same thing with workforce. You know, we have some significant workforce challenges. You know, for years, water utilities, we would pride ourselves on having employees who would stay 30, 35, 40 years. Well, the workforce has changed. People are not staying at jobs 30, 35, 40 years. And so we have to figure out how to deal with that. You know, so we have all these different challenges. We have new regulations that are coming. We have to figure out what those mean for us in our communities, for our funding, for the new infrastructure we might have to put in. It's a lot that we have to figure out. And so, you know, again, that network of people is how we're learning from each other. You know, we have granular activated carbon treatment here. So on a regular basis, other utilities might call us and ask us questions and want to learn about it and how, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly of having that treatment practice. And so we open our doors, come visit us, jump on a call, you know, whatever we can do to help you learn from our experience, then absolutely we want to jump on that call and help somebody else. And so that's pretty much happening across the entire water utility industry, that we're just helping each other figure out the best way to move forward. And we've always been that way. It just seems like lately we have to do it more because there's tons of regulations coming our way. There's infrastructure challenges. There's workforce challenges. Certainly affordability. It's just a lot happening at the same time. And we just find ourselves leaning on each other to figure it all out.
I love that. And I just keep coming back to the fact that we take clean water coming out of the faucet for granted and don't think about all the things that are happening that people like you are having to deal with. So thank you for sharing that, you know, a little confidence that there is a big network of people that are talking and thinking about this. When we think about water systems, and you mentioned lead pipe replacement initiative, and there's tons of other federal money coming through the Infrastructure Investments and Job Acts. You've talked a little bit about the challenges, especially that small and medium communities face in applying for those grants and getting those funds. But even if they could get the capital investment straight, how do they manage the sustainment requirements that follow those capital investment projects?
Yeah, so that's the big question, right? That's a big question for all of us, right? Not just the small and mediums, but for the large. It's like, yeah, if we can pull down some of this money, then it's just not a one-time deal. Like, we're going to have money to maintain and sustain everything after that. And what does that look like? And I think that's, we of course don't have the answers, you know, but again, the large water systems, we have had capital programs for years. We know a lot more about how to structure our rate increases, you know, collect, you know, from our billing systems and collect from the services we provide to customers to have that revenue to operate. But it's going to be a challenge for all of us. I mean, we haven't had this type of infrastructure money before, and now we have it. It is absolutely a drop in the bucket, but it's a drop that gets us started. But once we get started, we can't stop. And so where is that next bucket? Where is that continuous stream of money going to come from for us to address all our infrastructure needs? And we don't have the answer to that. And we know that we can't put it on the backs of our ratepayers. We just can't, because it would look like double-digit rate increases. And who can afford that years to come? And so we're all trying to figure that out now. It's like, we absolutely appreciate the money that has been provided to us through bill and other funding resources, but it's not enough for us to fix all the challenges that we have. And we're thankful to have the money to start the projects, but we are heavily concerned on the back end. Well, when is this going to run out? What does the next funding look like? Where are we going to get it from? You know, what are we going to do if we don't get it and we're in the middle of a project? I mean, we're just struggling with trying to find those answers and plan accordingly. It's a problem.
Are the big associations having these conversations at the federal level about continuing ongoing grant programs or ongoing funding to finish the capital investment?
Yes. So the Association of Metropolitan Water Agencies, AMWA, they're heavy on the water policy and certainly probably the leaders for us with policymakers, you know, with Congress in Washington, all the different avenues there on the funding that comes our way. And so they definitely are having regular conversations, trying to figure out where the money's going to come from, trying to make sure that they're representing us and letting them know our concerns, our needs, what's going on. So we have confidence in them and other organizations that they're going to make people hear what our needs are. But then it's one thing to hear it, but you've got to put some action to it. And so that's the big part that we're concerned about, because it could be a long time before we see action like we've seen with the bill money. And if that's the case, what do we do? Because we can start these projects, but we need to be able to maintain them. We need to have that maintenance to sustain everything that we're going to put in the ground to improve. And if we don't have it, then we're going to be back where we started before we got this influx of money.
And the challenges that you're facing in Cincinnati are different from the challenges in Phoenix and Fresno and Houston and New York City, right? So you've got all of your different geographic issues that you're trying to integrate into some
absolutely
national policy. That's got to be crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, as much as we might have challenges in the Midwest, you know, that right now we're focused on removing lead lines and any type of PFAS regulations that might come our way and other emerging regulations. But on the West Coast, they don't have enough water, you know? And so they're out there trying to figure out water rights and how to have enough water. We have a plentiful supply, but we have these other challenges. So just across the nation, it's just so much that's happening with water. And it's not just drinking water, it's wastewater too. We can't forget about wastewater. They have significant challenges as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give you a chance here in the last question to be the water fairy godmother. If you could wave your magic fairy godmother wand, where would you like to see innovation or reform in the water system management?
I guess you could probably at the heart of, if I'm the the water fairy godmother, which is pretty cool to think about that. But I think if I was the fairy godmother, I would want water to be considered a human right, right? And from that perspective, to have the action aligned with that. And by that, I mean, if it's a human right and the federal government and everyone else recognizes it, you know, domestically, that it's a human right, because I do believe that there's some recognition of that internationally. But if it's recognized domestically, well, that's a game changer, right? Because we are absolutely doing way more than we're doing now to figure out how to make sure that everybody has safe, clean water, that there are systems in place where we can maintain our infrastructure, that everybody has that water extended to their properties and their homes, that no one is left behind in any certain neighborhoods or disadvantaged communities. That's huge. It's a game changer. And so I think if I had that title and I could wave my wand, I would absolutely want water to be considered a human right, and that we are doing actions every day. We're doing actions to make sure that we honor that for everyone in the nation.
Well, that would totally reframe the conversation. So I love that. I love that. Kathy, thank you for all that you're doing for the great folks in Cincinnati. And thank you for sharing your insights with us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
For our listeners, check back every Monday for a new episode from the Academy as we work to build a just, fair, and inclusive government that strengthens communities and protects democracy.